listeners.
Hey, everybody.
It's another episode of the Board Game Brothers podcast. I'm Jeffrey Craig.
And I'm Matthew Craig.
We're brothers in real life.
And game designers in real life.
And this is our podcast where we talk about board games. And what you may have just heard was our brand new theme song.
Brand new song. That's exciting.
Same brand. Well, rebrand. Recently, we rebranded. It only felt natural that we also have a cool, spiffy new theme song. I mean, our old branding was kind of like DIY, you know, like arts and craftsy kind of. And so it kind of made sense that I performed, and this is a fun fact, I performed the theme song live every recording. But yeah, our new brand is I don't know, it's like more serious, and I feel like serious podcasts have theme songs. So now we do too.
Yes.
So hopefully you enjoyed that. This is our podcast where we talk about board games, and today we have another regularly scheduled episode for you where we are here to discuss a particular board game. So, Matthew, what game are we talking about today?
We are talking about Planet, designed by Ertis Selinskis and published in 2018 by Blue Orange Games.
All right. So, just like usual, we're going to talk about how the game is played to give some context. Then we're going to talk about some strategies in the game, and then we're going to talk about the game's design. So, for a short description on what Planet is about, in Planet, players compete to assemble the best planet for a lineup of animals based on the arrangement of the animals' preferred habitats. During a round of Planet, players take turns drafting and affixing tiles to their dodecahedron-shaped planetoids. At the end of every round, animal cards are awarded to the player who has the best environment on their planet for each respective animal. At the end of the game, points are tallied based on the animals you acquired and how much of your primary environment you collected on your planet, and the player with the most points wins. And yes, I did work in the phrase dodecahedron-shaped planetoid into that, and I'm very proud of myself for doing so. So every player has a 12-sided planet, kind of like a 12-sided die, if you've ever seen that. Basically looks exactly like that, with 12 blank faces. And every round, you draft these magnetic five-sided tiles, which magnetically stick to the sides of your planet, which is a very fun component about this game. And the goal is to earn points by acquiring animals, and the animals can only be acquired by the player with the best environment for them on the turn that they could be acquired. And then, yes, at the beginning of the game, each player is dealt a natural habitat objective card, which will have one of the five primary, one of the five different environments depicted on it, and different thresholds where you can earn points for having that much of that environment on your planet. And those will give you bonus points at the end of the game. Okay.
Right.
So, where do we begin about gameplay? Let's get little bit deeper into gameplay.
I want to start with describing the tiles. So okay. Each tile is a pentagon, of course, and it's split into five triangles.
Wedges, if you will.
Yeah. And each of these could be a different terrain type. Most tiles will have two or three terrains on it, consisting of those five tiles, those five wedges, I mean. And when you place a tile on your planetoid, you place the tile there, could put it anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And as you play more tiles, you start to connect your wedges into larger sort of territories or habitats.
Right. And if you can picture it, I've got like two tiles right here in my hands. One of them has three water environment wedges all next to each other. And then the other two triangles on this tile are forest. The other one, it has two water tiles next to each other, which is next to two desert triangles, and then there is a forest triangle making up the fifth, you know, wedge of this pentagon. So when I put them on my planet, if I put them next to each other, they will be sharing a side. One of their five sides will be touching the other one of five sides of the other one. So how I arrange them can either, you know, say I could connect the forest regions of both tiles along the same side. That would create a forest that is three triangles large. I can connect the water tiles next to each other, or the water triangles next to each other to make a ocean region that is five triangles now that they're connected. Or I could connect them so that the different regions are not touching the same region, because you can arrange these however you like. So I can make it so that the sand region on the one tile is touching the forest region of the other tile, if I so choose. And like you mentioned, I technically don't have to put these anywhere. I can, across multiple turns, I could play my tiles wherever I want on my planet on opposite sides. You know, they don't have to connect. Since this game takes 12 turns, and every turn you add one tile to your 12-sided sphere, eventually your sphere will be full and all of your tiles will be touching all of your other tiles. Or rather, all of your tiles will be touching another tile on all five sides.
Yeah. So whenever the game wants you to check how big a territory is, it counts those individual wedges.
Right.
Which is important for example, your like special goal, special habitat. That counts the total number of wedges on your planet, not the total number of tiles, which is why it can be so big of a requirement.
Yes, every tile has five wedges to it, and yes, like you mentioned, whenever the game asks you to count those, or count the size of a region, or the number of a region, for the purposes of your natural habitat card, objective card, you're counting those wedges. So the other situation where you have to count wedges is when you are acquiring animals. So really quick, I want to go through the setup of the game. So it takes place over 12 turns. At the start of the game, you shuffle all of the tiles and you divvy them out into five tile stacks. So you'll end up with 10 stacks of five tiles each. And then you shuffle the animal cards and you deal out 15 of those, I believe, or sorry, 20 of those in 10 different columns. And you don't deal one in every row. The first row of animals will have 10 animals to it. The second row has 7 animals to it, starting at the fourth column. And then the third row has 3 animals to it, starting at the, eighth column.
Okay.
And each of these columns will correspond with a turn in the game, starting at turn 3. You will draft 2 tiles to your planet before you start to see who has earned the animal cards. Now I mentioned there's 10 stacks of tiles, and 10 rows of cards, and they don't line up with each other. There's 2 stacks sort of like situated to the left of all of the animal cards. These are the stacks that you draft from at the start of the game before you start acquiring animals. And, after the tiles have been drafted, whether you're playing with 2 players, which is the minimum, or up to 4 players, which is the maximum, there's going to be tiles left over. Those leftover tiles will be moved to the end of the row of tiles, to the 11th and then 12th turn slots, and they will be drafted later. So the tiles at the beginning of the game that don't get drafted later. Eventually, you do end up filling those piles up with 2 stacks of 5, and there will still be excess tiles, unless you're playing a 4-player game, and those excess tiles are just removed from the game. So starting at turn 3, after players draft their tiles, and each player gets 1 tile every round, then you start to see animals, and whenever you finish drafting tiles on that turn, the third turn, and every other turn in the game, you check to see who has met the requirements for that animal the best. So Matthew, what are the kinds of requirements that animals look for in a planet?
There is largest territory touching another territory. So this is the largest territory of a given type. So that's, what is it, dirt, forest, desert, water, and ice?
Yeah, those are the 5 types of environment or territory.
So whoever has the largest region of that type touching the other region gets
Example, a bison wants the, or I maybe this is a yak. So this animal wants to be in the largest dirt region next to a sand region. It doesn't matter how large the sand region is, but it does matter how large the dirt region is. And so again, like we mentioned, when you're checking to see how large it is, you count the number of triangles in that region.
Yes, territory.
If there's a tie during turns 3 through 11, you place the animal in the next column, and the animal waits for there to not be a tie. Until you get to the 12th turn, in which case there's a couple of tiebreaker clauses, namely being like if there's a tie for the most, then you look at the second most, And if there's a tie for the second most, then you look for the third most. And if there's still a tie, then nobody gets that animal. It just stays in outer space, I guess. Right. I don't know where the animals are. Okay, what else are animals looking for?
There is also the largest territory not touching another type. Mm-hmm. So you could have the largest dirt territory not touching a desert.
So we got a Hedwig-looking owl. Or no, this is more like a Guardians of Gahool-looking owl. It wants to be in the largest forest, not touching water.
Right. And again, that's counting the largest territory, and then that's not touching that on any side of the territory. Yes.
And if a territory is connected to other tiles, you have to look at that whole connected territory to identify whether or not it is touching at any point the territory that you don't want it to be touching.
Yes. And then the final type of card is a animal that cares about who has the most of a given type of territory. This is represented right. by sort of five pentagons of that terrain type on the animal card.
So in this case, you don't want your territories to be connected if you're trying to score these animals. So if it says like panda wants to have the most forests, you look at how many individual forest regions you have that aren't connected to other forest regions. This is the one case in this game where you don't count the triangles. You're just counting how many connected territories you have on your, how many disconnected territories you have yeah. on your planet. And the player with the most obtains this animal.
Now,
again, if there's a tie, then you pass it to the next turn. And then next turn, there may be somebody with more than other players.
Yeah. Now, at the end of the game, each animal that matches your special chosen habitat is worth 1 point, but mm-hmm. each animal that does not match that is worth 2 points. So you right. want biodiversity.
These are the animals that you acquired. Yes. And like, you want biodiversity. Biodiversity is good.
Mm-hmm.
It's healthy. So that means I want to get this little math out here real quick. So assuming that you get a fairly even distribution of animals, meaning that 1/5 of the animals that are dealt in a game, which you deal 20 animals, so 1/5 would be 4 animals, match your region, that means there's a maximum of 36 points to be earned from animals, give or take, every game of Planet. This will be important when we get into strategy. If you're playing a 2-player game, that means that every player can get about 18 points on average, depending on which player planned better. In a 3-player game, you get about 12 points on average. And then in a 4-player game, you get about 9 points on average. Okay, so your environmental card, it's actually, this is where the symmetry breaks up. I think it should be said that there's one animal per any combination of territory wanting to be next to territory, territory not wanting to be next to territory, and one animal per, you know, number of individual territories requirement. So there's an even distribution there when it comes to the different kinds of cards. Of course, you shuffle and deal only and there's significantly more than 20 cards in the game. So in any given game, you're not dealing with all of the animals. So there is a chance that one territory is represented more than others, but it is statistically even chances for any of them being drawn in a given game. However, the distribution of types of territories on the tiles is not even, and that is reflected in how many of each different kind of territory you need to place on your planet in order to meet certain point thresholds. But that said, we're talking about the natural habitat cards, by the way. So the most points you can get from a natural habitat card is 10 points, but how many wedges, how many triangles of that territory that you need to get that 10 points is different to based on the terrain, is different based on the terrain. So for the ocean card, you need 30 ocean tiles to get 10 points. For the forest card, you need 27. For the ice card, you need 25. And then for the dirt and the desert, you need 23. So it's easier to get all of those points. Well, it's not technically easier to get those points because those terrains show up less frequently on the tiles that you add to your planet. I think it just sort of balances out the way the math goes. However, you need fewer of those on your planet as a whole, which somewhat makes it easier to acquire animals from other types of terrains, because you don't have to focus so hard on getting the terrain you need, or you don't have to fill up your planet with as much of the terrain as, say, a player with the ocean tile or the ocean natural habitat objective card.
Right. Should we talk about strategy?
Yeah, I think we should get into strategy, because I think we covered the basics.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you draft a tile every turn, you place it anywhere you want in any orientation, and you're trying to obtain these animals by meeting their requirements and having the best environment suitable for them.
Yes.
And then at the end of the game, you get your bonus points based on your natural habitat objective card. Okay.
Not a very complicated strategy game.
It's not. Yeah, it's a pretty simple game.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And the strategy is also somewhat simple. We can get a little more granular in that case, based on like effective value and like how many points you can expect to get. Like I mentioned, on average, there's about 36 points that you can earn in any given game of Planet from the animals. If you're in a four-player game and everyone does relatively the same point-wise from that, that means that, like I said, you get 9 points from that. And from your environment card, you get a maximum of 10 points. So in a four-player game, it's slightly better for you to focus on meeting the maximum benchmark for your environment, your natural habitat objective card, because it'll give you more points at the end of the game versus if you competed over the animals and came out about even.
That being said, there's still like good rule of thumbs for getting animals.
Mm-hmm.
One of the big ones, I think, is getting animals that want to touch your main natural habitat. Mm-hmm. So if your natural habitat card is water, then you want to look for the animals that want to touch water. That way, you can build it so that like you're still getting those other animals that aren't for your natural habitat, but mm-hmm. You can also build up like your large ocean or what have you.
Yeah, I hate to use such a animal, such an anti-animal phrase, but you are always trying to kill two birds with one stone in this game. except no, we're trying to make habitats for these birds out of stone sometimes if they want it.
Yes, you're trying to make two birdhouses.
Yeah, you're trying to make two birdhouses with one plank of wood, to twist the metaphor.
And always cut once.
So one way of doing that, like you said, is to acquire animals or create habitats that animals that match your natural habitat card. Well,
that check for your natural habitat.
That could also mean getting animals that want to touch your natural habitat. Because since your natural habitat will be so large, it's going to be touching a lot of different regions.
That's
now, the size of the region that any like important region is touching doesn't necessarily matter, but at least you have that leg up that your region is everywhere and it's not hard to come into contact with it. Another way of thinking about building birdhouses for two birds with one plank of wood is when two animals have like reflective or equal opposite reflective synergistic needs, not opposite, I guess, kind of
sort of.
So for example, if one animal wants the largest forest touching sand and another animal in the lineup wants the largest sand touching forest, those are two animals that are very easy to go for, because you just need to make sure that you have forest touching sand and either of them are quite large. Similarly, if one animal wants to be in the largest forest not touching ice, and another animal wants to be in the largest forest not touching water, then you can build one forest region that is both not touching ice or water. And that'll satisfy both requirements. You're building the birdhouse for both birds in that case, just as long as the forest region is large enough. One situation where things can get tricky is when one animal, say, for example, say your primary region is water. One animal wants to be in the largest water touching ice. One animal wants to be in the largest water not touching ice. In that case, you can't just build one big water region, because it's going to meet one requirement but not meet the other. The way that you can meet both requirements is you can build two water regions on your planet that do not connect, and be very careful with identifying what other regions touch each of those regions. So for example, if that situation were to happen, you can make a very large water region and touch it to an ice to meet the first animal, and then on the opposite side of your planet build another large water region but keep the ice as far away from it as possible to make the other requirement. And if both of them match, you know, your water natural habitat card even better.
I mean, I don't have much else to say. If there is, I think one of the easiest ones to go for that matches your habitat is the ones that look for the most of a given region.
Mm-hmm.
Because any tiles you play that have your region will count towards your card, even if they're disconnected from the rest of that region. So if you have a card for ocean and you get a tile that has like two oceans, but you don't connect it to anything else, then that's fine. It still mm-hmm. counts towards your card. And so you can also use that to get the like ocean largest or most amount of regions.
Mm-hmm.
It's not worth as many points, but it is still points.
So I have a couple more strategy points. Here's some advanced planet tips. Okay, so it's impossible to take a region that's already touching another region and remove it or prevent it from touching that region in the future. So if you make your large ocean and it's touching ice, there's no way you can make that large ocean not touch ice. However, you can take a region that isn't touching anything and make it touch that thing later. So like, if you see on turn three, there's a what is it called? Seahorse. There's a seahorse, which wants to be in the largest ocean, not touching sand. But then on turn five, there's the sea turtle, which wants to be in the largest ocean that is touching sand. You can use the same ocean for both of these, because on turn three, you need to make sure that the ocean isn't touching sand. But anytime before the end of turn five, you just add a sand on the edge of it. And therefore, it will be touching sand. So this is another way of seeing a synergy. It looks like an anti-synergy at first, but it actually is a synergy, and you are definitely building two, one birdhouse. The metaphor gets lost in me every. I get a little lost in this metaphor every time I try to say it. You're building the one birdhouse for both birds. So that's one little advanced tip. Similarly, you can always connect two regions that are separate before the end of the game. So if you did your, you know, two oceans that are filling separate needs, but then by the end of the game, maybe there's another person who happens to have a lot of oceans, and you're seeing this one animal come up. One of your oceans is touching the dirt, but your other ocean isn't. But if you can connect them, then you will have the absolute largest ocean touching dirt. As long as it doesn't matter that the other one doesn't touch dirt for the rest of the game, then you're gravy.
Mm.
Okay, last tip. Always have a running tally of how much of your natural habitat's tile environment type is in your planet at any given turn. So pretty much every turn, I'll just rotate my planet and count exactly how many I have. And then whenever I draft a tile, I keep in mind how many of my natural habitat is on that tile, and I just add it to that number. You know, double check my work if I think I missed something, or if I forgot to check last turn, I check it the next turn. Always have that running tally, because the thresholds that you need to meet for each point value on your natural habitat card are a couple tiles apart. Like, for example, on the ocean, 18 ocean wedges will get you 2, 21 ocean wedges will get you 4, 24 ocean wedges will get you 6, 27 gives you 8, and 30 gives you 10. So you don't want to have 29 ocean wedges on your sphere at the end of the game, because that's only going to give you 8 points, even though you're just one away from getting the 10 points. And that also probably means that you may have wasted one of your turns getting an ocean tile that had 2 oceans on it when you didn't actually need those 2 oceans. So keep that running tally in your head and try and plan ahead to make sure you're hitting those benchmarks. And then when you don't need to hit those benchmarks, either because you've exceeded the maximum or because you realize that you cannot meet the next tier, you can focus your efforts on doing things that acquire the animals from the board, because that's what's going to give you points at that point. Getting more oceans when you can't do anything with them is not giving you any points.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess one last thing I can mention is that, like I mentioned, the tiles that don't get drafted at the beginning of the game get placed in the draft piles at the end of the game. So you can predict, or you know what's coming up, and every player can look at what's coming up if they want to see what tiles are available. So if it comes to like turn 9 or turn 10, you know that what the tiles are going to be in turn 11 and turn 12. So you can calculate how many tiles of your natural habitat are coming up, and then choose to either focus on getting them because you know In the next pile, there's definitely a tile with two dirt on it, and that'll get you to the final point level. Or I know that the tiles coming up don't have any dirt on them, so I should stop trying to get more dirt tiles, and I should just focus on the animals that are here and get the types of terrains that they care about. I lied. I have one more strategy tip. It's just that there's a lot to focus on in this game between the animals and all the things that they want and your natural habitat card, that oftentimes even a region with only like two or three triangles to it can still win an animal based on your rather than your opponents winning that animal. Like if the elephant wants the largest sand next to dirt, and everyone forgets about that, and then it comes to the elephant and everyone's like, looking all over their planet, you know, some person said, well, a while ago I drafted this tile that just happened to have two sand and a dirt on it, so I guess I have two. You know, as long as you have like three or four, you know, on your tile, you or on your planet, then you've beaten them. So just glance over all the animals, and if you can, while it helps, while you're doing something else, like focusing on the animals that synergize or working on your natural habitat, if you can also somehow like draft a tile that might give you a region about three or four triangles large, that could matter. That could make the difference for the end of the game.
I actually do have one last point, which is spin your planet around.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It's easy to forget what's on your planet if you're holding it in one sort of position. So just kind of spin it around, try to look at it from a new angle. You might find like a place where you could sneak in a tile that doesn't connect to things you don't want to connect.
Yeah, yeah. Constantly turn your planet. I'm pretty much always playing with my planet.
It's fun.
When I play this game, it's fun to just kind of spin it around. Just don't be too rough, because then your tiles will fall off your planet, and those are very hard to return to their original places if you aren't hyper aware of mm-hmm. the exact layout of your planet.
Yeah.
Okay. So that does it for strategy. Before we get into design discussion, let's go to some plugs. So if you haven't already, feel free to follow us on Facebook and Twitter at BG Bros Cast. That is our handle on either platform. You can hit us up with comments and suggestions for games that you like and that you would like to hear our thoughts on those platforms. That's at BG Bros Cast on Facebook and Twitter. You can go to our website, bgbcast.com, where we have all of our episodes posted and categorized and tagged. You can look through the tags, see if there's any games you want to hear our thoughts on. You could also use our great search bar function at the top of the website to find new specific episodes. Bar. Yes, it's shiny. It's new. Feel free. Have at it. Feel free to have at it. You can also find a link to our TeePublic store on our website. That's teepublic.com/user/BGBcast, where we have our cool merch with our cool logo on it. We don't just have t-shirts. We have mouse pads, stickers, fridge magnets, which is kind of a relevant object when we get into the design of this game. So you can go to our TeePublic store through our website or teepublic.com/user/BGBcast to acquire that sweet, sweet merch. That does it for BG Bros plugs. Let's hear it for Matt plugs.
You can follow me on Twitter at Matt Craig Gaming, where I tweet about things like YouTube videos I'm making, streams I'm doing, what have you, different projects. I stream on twitch.tv/twack. That's twitch.tv/TWAK. I stream on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from about 1 p.m. Central Time to 3 or 4 p.m. Central Time. I play a lot of roguelites, a lot of competitive games, some single-player games here and there, some speedruns. Been playing a lot of Binding of Isaac and a lot of Teamfight Tactics. So if you're interested in that, come check it out. It's always chill, always interesting and analytical. You can also check out my other podcast, NetSurfer Pro, a whirlwind ride through the World Wide Web, where me and my friend Galen talk about pretty much different interesting media from the last few decades. And this month is April Wave, where we are talking about vaporwave media. So if you've never heard of that, or you have and you're interested to hear about it, check that out. That's NetSurfer Pro on all podcasting platforms.
NetSurfer Pro. What was that again? A whirlwind ride through the World Wide Web?
Yes.
I'm very impressed that you can say that without fumbling
I practiced.
All right. For myself, you can follow me on Twitter at Jeff Craig Designs, and you can find me on Twitch at Radical Hawks. That's at Radical HAWKZ. Lately, I've been streaming somewhat frequently, and I stream a lot of teamfight tactics. And when the servers go down, I like to stream stuff like Dicey Dungeons, like fun strategy games is my style. That's again, twitch.tv/Radical Hawks, Radical HAWKZ. All right. That does it for our mid-episode plugs. Now let's talk about the design of board game, or not board game, of Planet, the board game Planet.
We could talk about the design of Board Game Bros, but not now.
Not now. That's a Patreon episode for when we reboot the Patreon. So anyways, Planet, I mentioned in the plug section, if you listen to it, that fridge magnets are relevant. And that's because basically that's what the tiles in this game are. As we talk about the design of this game, I think one topic that'll definitely come up is that the components are king in this game.
Yes, this is a component game.
It's a component forward game. It's a, what would you call it? It's a bottom up design, not really a top down design.
Yeah. So, I want to start with saying that there's sort of a saying that there's three main ways you can kind of start a game design. This is in no way definite, but this is sort of a good starting point, which is to begin with either a mechanic, theme, or component. I like to add in a moment as well, but that's beside the point. This game definitely feels like a game that started either with the component or with the theme that then added the component next.
Like, yeah, if
everything in the game is in of service of making the components work.
Right. I would say, yeah, like, obviously the theme matches the component very well to an extent. Obviously, planets aren't created one face at a time in real life. But a dodecahedron is planet-shaped, and it makes sense that, you know, you would put terrain tiles on the outside of a thing and call it a planet.
There's this really fun element of having the whole world in your hands, literally.
Yes, the game has, there's a level of satisfaction when playing this game because the components are so well designed and so appropriate for the theme. So the design of the component, the creativity of the component, you know, I've never seen a game like this. I've seen a game where you adjust the faces of different objects like Dice Forge, where you change the faces of dice, but nothing where you're changing the faces of such a large polyhedron. It's about the size of a baseball to a softball. It's a little larger than a baseball, so it's pretty large, and that means that they could only fit four into the box, so this is a pretty hard limit to how many players can play it. But it is satisfying. It's tactile, and the fridge magnets, the strength of the fridge magnet is kind of the perfect strength for these things, because it's not difficult at all to remove them. They don't really fuse to each other too much that you can't separate them from one another. And they hold onto the side of this dodecahedron, this polyhedron, enough that you can roll it around in your hands a little bit. You can't be too rough with it or else they will fall off, which is one unfortunate thing. But I think a fridge magnet is a very clever way, especially because like fridge magnets are already made, you know, in mass production quantities. So I assume that this game was not, at least when it came to the tiles, not difficult to produce. The balls themselves probably required a bit of production and engineering bespoke for this game.
It's interesting comparing this game to Hero Forge, which is a game where the alternate tiles sort of snap on like Legos.
You mean Dice Forge?
Sorry, Dice Forge. Yeah, that's a game where the tiles snap on like Legos. Mm-hmm. And they very could well have made Planet with these sort of snapping tiles. But I think the refrigerator magnets really help it be smooth. There's not a lot of fumbling with trying to get it in or getting it out.
Because the arrangement of the tiles is so important, then it's nice that you can put it on and then immediately think like, you know, I do kind of want to turn it like five or three turns to the right, and that'll be the perfect arrangement. And you don't have to really struggle with that aspect of it. You're not supposed to change your tiles after you've placed them on your planet, but, you know, obviously we give a little bit of leeway. Like, you can make up your mind until we get to scoring the animals.
Yeah. So
it's not a huge problem.
Mm-hmm. And I also think it helps with setup a lot, but not setup, the opposite, takedown.
Yeah.
Put back, pick up, there we go.
Breakdown.
Yeah, it helps with that a lot because clean up, there we go. I was trying to think of the Barney song because, I can't count how many times I've tried removing a flat tile from like a Lego or something, but I mean, even Dice Forge was kind of difficult with that.
Mm-hmm. They included like a tool to help you with it.
Yeah.
Or you would sometimes just use other tiles to pry the tiles off.
Right. But then you don't have to pry damage the tile sometimes.
Yeah. In this game, it's also very useful that it's easy to take them off the sphere because at the end of the game, it makes it a lot easier to count how many triangles you have of your particular natural habitat objective card. I like to just take them all off I take all the tiles off my sphere at the end of the game after I've, after you've drafted your last tile and all of the animals have been spoken for, you can take all your tiles off. It actually doesn't matter what your planet looks like at that point.
Yeah.
So I take them all off and I arrange them like, here's all the tiles that have 3 water, here's all the tiles that have 2, here's all the tiles that have 1, and then it's pretty easy to add up and see how many water triangles you've got in your planet at the end of the game.
Yeah, there's definitely games I've played where like, the amount of setup and then cleanup I know I'll have to do afterwards kind of overshadows the fun of the game.
Spirit Island from our previous episode has quite a bit of, oh, I forgot to mention this, but I got a broken token wooden piece inserts for Spirit Island and all of its expansions, and it is somewhat of a lifesaver.
Right. I was also going to say Food Chain Magnate is a big one like this, where like I'd love to play it more, but it takes so long to put up afterwards. But then this game is a very short game, and so having these ease of use, easy to move and remove tiles really helps that.
Mm-hmm.
Like this is definitely like a game you could play in 10 minutes, and it helps the fluidity of it all.
In fact, we did play this game in about 10 minutes. The last time we played, it went very quickly.
Yeah. The tile, like, the mechanics are generally very simple. There's only 3 types of cards as far as what they check for. And, your only other form of scoring is your hidden score objective. But all of that does work in service of the components. So, sort of the whole moment of the game is that early game, it's easy to connect tiles the way you want to and be very particular, but because you have to eventually fill in those gaps on your planet, you'll most likely end up connecting things you don't want to, or putting a territory next to another one accidentally, and it helps from like a game pace perspective that a lot of the really tough connections happen towards the end of the game. Sometimes it can feel kind of bad when it happens too suddenly, but to me, it's typically more of a case of like, next time I'll have to plan ahead a bit better.
Yeah, at least it's sort of given you time to learn and become aware of the things that you need to pay attention to.
And they
so that by the end of the game when it happens, or towards the end of the game when it happens, it feels less bad. Like, you don't get blindsided by this fact.
Right, and you'll typically have already gotten a few animals from your placement. So it's sort of like a catch-up mechanic in a way that somebody with a giant territory will eventually fall. But like that's also helped because of the way that the tiles tessellate with each other, and that like because it's a planet that is 360 degrees, it will wrap around eventually.
Mm-hmm.
And none of that could have really been done the same way with just like a board, for example. If it it would be a lot harder to bookkeep, definitely, because it. You'd have to like manually wrap it around or whatever, but with a physical 3D object, you just look at it.
I would. So the mechanics fit the components very well. And the theme fits the components really well to an extent. I would say that it becomes, at least to me, this might not be the case to maybe your average to an average board game player, but to like design minded people or people playing this board game, with the end goal in mind to talk about it on a podcast about board game design, the mechanics of the game don't really differentiate between the different like types of animals or types of environments, except for the distribution of each environment across the game's tiles.
Ocean is the most common.
Yeah, ocean is the most common, and that makes plenty of thematic sense for a planet in general, and then it follows forest, then ice, then deserts and plains. Yeah, that makes sense. But the rest of the game is not distributed in any way. Everything is distributed evenly. You know, there's the same number of forest animals as there are water animals, as there are ice animals. At least this doesn't come across in any given game, because you have to shuffle all the animals together and deal out 20 of them at random, which will end up with some of them appearing more than others.
Yeah, but it mechanically makes sense, though.
But knowing that that it's all mechanically evenly distributed makes it sort of a flavor loss for me. Mm-hmm. That like the ocean animals don't care about different things than the forest animals. They all essentially mechanically care about the same thing.
Yeah, it's
to the same extent.
It's a very abstract game in the end, in service of like keeping the mechanic simple and keeping all that kind of straightforward.
Mm-hmm.
I think there is something kind of pleasant about the evenly distributed everything else other than the tiles. Like, mm-hmm. you know, you're going to get 12 tiles every game. There's one animal of each sort of combination. You know, there's five terrain types, just like there's five sides on a pentagon.
I guess there are a couple satisfying ways that these things line up.
Mm-hmm. There are a pretty good amount of animals that I feel like make sense for their theming.
For sure.
But then there's also a few that I'm not quite sure of, but I also don't know if that's because I'm not as familiar with the animal.
Sure. I think when it does make sense, that creates a very satisfying feeling. Yeah. And I don't think it's really ever glaring when it doesn't make sense. Like, mm-hmm. obviously, they don't put any fish on, like, a terrestrial terrain. All the fish are caring about water and some, you know, waterborne mammals like whales and orcas. But yeah, when it makes sense, it's very satisfying. Like the clownfish, since the clownfish is a fish that dwells in tropical reefs, it makes sense that it wants to be in the largest water that is not touching ice.
Right.
You know, this is a simple game that I imagine is for I haven't actually looked at it on the box exactly. Okay, ages 8 and up. Yeah, right. So asking that like the water animals be more mechanically diverse than the forest animals is, you know, a mid 20s year old person that I am, you know, wanting more out of a game for 8-year olds. You know, being as simple and as easy to understand as it is, there's not a lot to pick apart. Except I do have one slight gripe with the game. The game doesn't reward you enough for doing the satisfying thing. But what were you going to say something, Matthew?
Yeah, I was just going to say that I feel like most of Blue Orange's catalog is sort of like games that tend towards a wider age range.
Yeah.
And so I'm not surprised that this kind of does things in service of being a wider applicable game.
So Blue Orange does make Photosynthesis, which is another similarly simple game, but it has a bit more strategic depth than this one, but that doesn't necessarily come from any like mechanical or like fine tuning of design and mechanics and distribution of those things. So anyways, what I want to get to is to go over that, like the sense of satisfaction that I believe comes from playing your tiles on your planet comes from when they line up really well, like when all of your, you know, grass and water and stuff is all touching each other very nicely. It can also be extremely satisfying when you can put like icy poles on opposite ends. So like you have most of your ice on either end of your planet, and then most of your forest goes around the center, like making a planet the way it's normally arranged, the different types of environments. But the game doesn't necessarily reward you. In fact, in more than half of the time, it's discouraging you, because the separate terrains requirement that some animals have, like having the most individual ocean regions, or the ocean not touching any kind of region, all of those are asking you not to line your things up. They're like kind of requiring you, if you want to earn your points that way, to place your tiles, you know, in different parts of your planet. You know, it's saying like you don't actually even want to put your first two tiles next to each other per se. You want to make these scattered regions that only come like cobbled together later, or just in order to keep one region away from another region, then you have to place a tile in like a totally weird way or a weird feeling way. You know, like this tile is rotated so that all of its faces are not touching any of the same faces. Like, but that's just because I'm trying to cut off my water from the forest. So in that case, the game sort of makes you do things that you don't necessarily want to do to make a satisfying looking, feeling planet, which is unfortunate. It does, you know, with the region's largest region touching this kind of region, those mechanics do want you to do that. So I, you know, that's a good thing that it's a hit for me. It's a good thing that they are encouraging it with those, but because everything is evenly distributed, that means that when you combine the region not touching region cards with the split individual region cards, that's over half of the cards in the game.
Yeah. I think it's like most tile placement games that rely on connecting similar tiles, they do reward you for connecting more of the same to like make it look good, or they incidentally make things look good with like Carcassonne. You know, it just happens to all kind of line up. Mm-hmm. But
you know, King Domino is another blue-orange game that only rewards you for connecting regions of the same type. It does not encourage you or reward you for doing the opposite.
Right. Now, Queen Domino, on the other hand, but
we'll get into that later. Yeah. We haven't done a review of Queen Domino, have we?
We haven't. But okay, no, yeah,
it's something for the future.
It ends up making it look really messy, which doesn't make sense from like, you know, the concept of biomes.
Mm-hmm.
Things tend to be kind of in clumps. You know, you don't think of a mountain range as being a bunch of mountains kind of scattered around.
Right. Actually, mountains aren't a region per se. I think they've lumped plains. Well, I guess some forest areas are somewhat considered to be like a plains, and some deserts are considered a plains, and some dirt is considered a plains, but then some dirt is considered mountains. So,
there's like savanna animals in the desert, and then there's mountain animals in the plains. Like I know there's like yaks or goats, like mountain goats,
like an eagle.
Yeah.
Anyways, but nature, you know, it works in large clusters and in lines and stuff, not straight lines. Of course, nature doesn't build in straight lines. Prometheus taught us that, but Prometheus, the movie, in the Alien franchise.
I thought Prometheus taught us fire.
Yes. Prometheus, the character of mythological legend, taught us fire. But in the first few minutes of the movie Prometheus, they identify alien structures by correctly identifying that nature does not build in straight lines. But it does build in curved lines. So when you have to make all these different disjointed decisions with your tiles, not only is it not so satisfying, it also doesn't really match up with the theme very well. And it's unfortunate that the game encourages you to do that a little more than half the time.
Yeah. 15 out of 25.
That's a small little gripe that I have with this game, which is otherwise a pretty well put together game that is very simple, great for most ages, and very replayable too. I think I've played it about 4 times now. I definitely play it again, mostly because it's very quick and it still has that element of satisfaction. I think where I'm finding more of the fun playing this game now is trying to win while trying to do mostly satisfying things, making mostly satisfying decisions. I think it's similar to Cartographers, where, you know, I try to win at Cartographers, but I try to do it in the most satisfying way.
Find the fun.
Yes. And a game that has the room to find that fun is a pretty good game.
Yeah, the entire room of an entire planet.
Yes.
All right.
It's a lot of room. It's all the room we have, really.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you have anything else to add about the design of Planet?
Not that I can think of, except there are some very good pictures in this game, including a prairie dog.
The illustrations are consistent and on point. The use of color is very good.
I mean, they're animals. You can't go wrong.
Each environment, I mean, I'm saying like the green, brown, white, blue, and yellow for the different environments. They also have different textures, so there is that accessibility as well. So yeah, I think that's it on our discussion on Planet. Thank you for listening.
See ya.